This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As you probably know, Jim McGreevy, the former governor of New Jersey, is talking about his formerly secret gay life. He's written a memoir called The Confession, and he's doing media interviews. We'll hear from him a little later. But first, we're going to talk with two political reporters from the Newark Star-Ledger, New Jersey's leading newspaper. Josh Margolin and Jeff Whalen were part of the team that won a Pulitzer Prize for the Star-Ledger's coverage of McGreevy's resignation. When McGreevy resigned on August 12, 2004, he revealed that he is gay and that although he is married, he'd had an affair with a man. He said, "Given the circumstances surrounding the affair, its likely impact on my family and my ability to govern, I've decided the right course of action is to resign." He did not mention that the man he now says he had an affair with, Golan Sapel, was an Israeli whom McGreevy helped bring to New Jersey, appointed to his staff, and gave the position of Homeland Security Advisor. I asked the two reporters about the questions surrounding McGreevy and Sapel's professional relationship. Jeff Whalen spoke first.
The key question was, I mean, and the reason why that this exploded so much, when we go back to the day of August 12th and when they were wrestling, McGreevy and his advisors, with should he resign, should he not resign. There was one of his advisors who, you know, as they were weighing the political calculations, can you survive this? They said, you know, a gay affair, okay, that's, or you had an affair, that's a tough thing to get over, but they said you can survive it. A gay affair, you know, is going to make it more sensational, tougher politically to manage it, but you can survive it in a state like New Jersey. And then they said, you know, you appointed your lover as the Homeland Security Advisor a few months after 9/11, and it turns out the guy didn't have credentials. That was it. Game over. He could not survive it politically. And that was the key thing. Josh had done a story very early on after Golan was appointed that as an Israeli citizen, he could not even get FBI clearance. So in New Jersey, which was so close to the World Trade Center attacks, he had this heightened awareness about the dangers of terrorism, and to make that appointment was a fantastic example of bad judgment, to say the least, I think, and that was a key factor in all this.
Now, I'm correct in saying, right, that in his resignation speech, McGreevy didn't mention that the person he had the affair with had been in his administration.
That is correct.
Right.
What were the calculations behind that?
I think that speech will go down as a brilliant piece of political public relations mastery. I think that they were trying to wrestle the story away from McGreevy and the headline and the leads of stories in the news, the snippet on the 6 o'clock news being McGreevy hired his lover as the Homeland Security Advisor, and that's why he was stepping down. And they brilliantly, you know, that line, the "I am a gay American," made that the headline in our paper. That was the large point headline the next day. And by downplaying the Golan Sapel thing and making that something that wound up in a third or fourth paragraph about having to explain, you know, who this figure was, the real thing that grabbed people was his coming out and his wrestling with his homosexuality and finally being honest about that. And it put the Golan Sapel piece, I think, a little further down into a story of when you're explaining that. And to this day, you get outside of the New Jersey area, if I go out to the Midwest or wherever, people still say, well, you know, I don't understand why he had to resign just because he was gay. And I think that goes to the fact that, you know, they did an excellent job of framing this story as a coming out story and as someone who had betrayed his wife, but it being a very personal matter rather than something that directly related to his judgment as a public official.
And then also it's important to go back to that time, because now we and McGreevy and everybody else involved is a lot freer to talk about it. But remember the timing of what was going on in August of 2004. The reason this came to a head was because Sapel had been threatening a lawsuit and the statute of limitations was running out. At that point, and I don't know what's in Jim McGreevy's mind because I have yet to ask him a single question that he's willing to answer about this, but there may well have been a legal calculation that he did not want to confirm an affair with this man who was threatening a lawsuit at that point because it may have opened him up to an exposure that no longer exists because the statute of limitations ran out shortly after the August 12th. And it was up to Golan Sepel himself and his lawyers to go public with the first statement that I am Golan Sepel, I am the one he's referring to who he had an affair with, or whatever the wording was.
What are some of the things that you think were inappropriate in the professional relationship between Governor McGreevy and his aide, Golan Sepel? Things in terms of how he brought him here to the United States, the positions he appointed him to, the qualifications he had for those positions?
It's not so much what we think is as much as what people were questioning. And McGreevy actually delves into this quite significantly in the book. He pretty much didn't have any qualifications to be special counselor to the governor for Homeland Security. He didn't have the qualifications for it before 9/11, certainly not after 9/11. And it doesn't seem that anybody even quarrels with that any longer. The whole thing took on a life of its own because as soon as Sepel's identity and position got into the public domain, questions started being raised by very significant political players, people close to McGreevy, people not close to McGreevy. They were going public. They were asking questions. Please explain this man's qualifications. McGreevy reacted, you know, the way that the DePauls and the operatives always talk about. He got into the bunker. He wouldn't answer a question. We referred to him throwing up a protective wall around Sepel. They wouldn't allow him to go to the state senate. It became a huge sort of burning issue in Trenton. So there was never any question. Golan never had qualifications for that job. There's a little bit in the book where McGreevy tries to explain that that was only one portfolio he had, but he was introduced to the world through that portfolio, and that basically defined the issue all the way through.
And it didn't stop with his resignation from state government, with Golan Sepel's resignation from state government. Directly after that resignation, the governor helped him land a job with a prominent politically connected lobbying firm in Trenton. And that raises questions as well. You have the governor helping what he says is his boyfriend get a job with a lobbying firm. It raises questions about indebtedness the administration has to a favor, you know, that a lobbying firm is helping them get. And he proceeded to help him get other jobs with entities that had business before state government and needed things from state government. And that raises ethical questions, some of which I don't think he addresses very extensively in the book. I think there's a cursory talk about that, but he doesn't grapple with those questions and what they meant for him.
Meanwhile, Golan Sepel is saying that he and McGreevy never had an affair, that it was actually sexual harassment, that Sepel was sexually harassed by McGreevy. And I'm wondering how serious you take what Sepel is saying now.
I take it very seriously. We're at exactly the same point with what McGreevy and Sepel say today as we were with the rumors about McGreevy's sexuality going back. We're in the very messiest of places to be, both in terms of human behavior and in terms of covering people and covering politicians. You have a situation where there was some sort of activity that went on behind closed doors between two people, and those two people have differing recollections or tales to tell from those encounters, and neither one has proven his case. Neither one has gone into any kind of situation where they're compelled by law to tell the truth, and so who do you believe?
You question the ethics of appointing Golan Sepel to the McGreevy administration. Were there other people in the administration whose qualifications were questioned, or other controversies similar to this but not revolving around homosexuality in the administration?
There definitely were. There were a lot of appointments that McGreevy had made that had come under scrutiny and been viewed as just either bad appointments or politically tainted appointments. He mentions one in the book, which was a man by the name of Charles Kushner, who was a major developer who he appointed to the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Kushner had contributed over $1 million to his campaigns, and there was a lot of criticism from Republicans and others that this had been some sort of payback. McGreevy defends that appointment in the book very aggressively. Kushner wound up eventually being caught up in an investigation about donations he had made to Democrats, including McGreevy, and then got caught up in a bizarre, which there's a lot of, McGreevy himself said in the book that it's amazing the number of people around him who had crazy meltdowns. Charlie Kushner was one of them. He was convicted in a bizarre scheme that stemmed from this investigation, where he had videotaped, or had his brother-in-law videotaped, having sex with a hooker, and he used that to blackmail him, and eventually went down. And that happened in the weeks before McGreevy's resignation announcement. But that's one example. There were other examples. The thing about the Sapel one is it seemed, in addition, if you take away the homosexuality aspect out of it, and which at that point was speculation for most of the time, I mean, for the entire time until McGreevy made his announcement. But what took that into a different realm, I think, was the Homeland Security piece of it, where it didn't seem like routine, mundane political patronage appointments to various things. It seemed something that resonated with the public, I think, and grabbed their attention a little more, because it was an issue where people were not willing to tolerate favoritism or cronyism or patronage. And then you had in the other aspect of it, which was this backdrop of suspicion about their relationship, and that is what brought it to the fore even more so.
And then even beyond that, you ended up having a situation where, when we started doing research into what Sapel was actually doing, it turned out that he was basically doing nothing. I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a no-show job, because that's a characterization I'm uncomfortable making, but we ended up filing a Freedom of Information request to get all of his work product. And there was pretty minimal product to be had for $110,000 a year for somebody who was the Homeland Security advisor.
My guests are Josh Margolin and Jeff Whalen, political reporters for the Newark Star-Ledger. We'll talk more about covering Jim McGreevy after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Josh Margolin and Jeff Whalen, political reporters for the Newark Star-Ledger. They were part of the team that won a Pulitzer Prize for coverage of New Jersey Governor Jim McGreevy's resignation. Would you describe what it was like in your newsroom after McGreevy made his resignation speech? You guys won a Pulitzer Prize for your coverage of his resignation and its aftermath. So what was it like right after that speech was finished?
You know, it started, let me take you back a little bit to before the speech.
But we do want to say that neither one of us was actually in the newsroom at the time, because we were both out on the street trying to report the story. So we only have heard secondhand what it was like.
Good point.
But for us, that day, Josh and I both take the Jersey Turnpike down to work down to Trenton in the morning. And leading up to this day, you had I mentioned Charlie Kushner, one of his biggest campaign contributor, involved in this bizarre blackmail scheme, intimidating an FBI witness. You had his other biggest fundraiser, or one of his biggest fundraisers, a man by the name of David Damiano, a trash hauler, who had been indicted. And McGreevy was involved in that because he had uttered the word Machiavelli, which federal prosecutors said was a code word for a bribery scheme. So the governor himself never charged, but was somehow involved in that. So you had all these really bizarre political plot twists running out there. And as we're driving down to work that day, and his commerce secretary also had resigned under an ethics investigation a few days before, Josh calls me up as we're riding down. He said, "Have you heard anything weird in the last 24 hours?
The last 12 hours.
And I thought to myself, well, my standards for what is weird in this state have really taken a turn. So I said no. And Josh had heard the first tip about what was going to happen that day. And for some reason, and we'd heard these rumors for years, for some reason, this felt real immediately, and it felt possible. And we immediately put some calls out, and started to realize that this was going to happen that afternoon. And although right up until that moment, and I was in the governor's office when he made his announcement, but we had a pretty good idea. I mean, we were 95% sure of what he was going to say when he made that announcement, and it still took my breath away, and I think took everyone in the governor's office breath away when he actually said that. And as Josh said, we were not in the newsroom, but everyone was gathered around the TV.
Apparently, it was dead silence. Everyone was gathered around the various TVs around the newsroom, and then he said the words, "My truth is I'm a gay American." And apparently one reporter who wrote one of the stories that was also part of the Pulitzer Prize winning package, she went sort of like, "Oh my God," or some sort of gasp, but it was so loud and the room was so quiet that everybody across the whole newsroom heard, and it was a pretty dramatic moment from the way people described it to us, although we actually didn't have much of a chance to process anything until maybe midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, 8-9 hours after the announcement, because it was just that kind of pace that day.
Before McGreevy came out, you both had decided not to pursue rumors that McGreevy was gay. But after he came out and made his resignation address and being gay was kind of on the table, how did you draw the line at that point between what was public and what was private? What was just kind of like personal stuff that you didn't need to investigate? And what was really relevant that the public should know?
In all honesty, after he made his announcement, in terms of our reporting and questions that we would ask, there was nothing that was off limits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say that everything that we learned or suspected or somebody suggested to us would wind up in the paper. But we embarked on a 3-month investigation to find out everything we could, good, bad, and different, that led up to that moment when he resigned and the ultimate end of his career. And that's when we came upon the information about the strip clubs and the go-go bars and the visits to the gay clubs in Atlantic City and other kinds of information, because at that point there was no longer the response that you typically would have to a newspaper where people would say, no, you have no right to ask that question. The gloves were off, literally.
Not to mention, I mean, his sex life seemed to be so wound up in his political career. That's what was amazing about it. There's the anecdote that he tells about the prostitute who had claimed that she had had sex with him back in 1997. That's one of the things that we uncovered in this investigation Josh is talking about. And in the story there was he says that it never happened. It was a lie. He never even met her. But his political handlers did take it seriously enough as he was running for governor that they took this prostitute and they ferried her down to Florida to hide her out and keep her away from newspaper reporters before the campaign. So that's the other factor here, is that it was, you know, his sex life was completely intertwined with his political career. So those questions had to be asked.
Let me quote something that McGreevy writes in the acknowledgments of his book. He says, "For chronicling my political life so closely and not always with rancor, I'd like to thank members of the New Jersey Press Corps whose work I consulted in creating this account." And he includes your names in that list of members of the New Jersey Press Corps that he wants to thank. So did it please you to know that he was rereading your articles about him to write this book?
You know, reading the book, actually, there was a lot that was familiar in there, I'll say that. I was actually surprised by that line. I mean, he did have a very troubled relationship with most of the press corps, and I think that stems from what he acknowledges himself was the secrecy that drove him. And because he had the larger secret that he was trying to keep about his alleged affair with Golan and his homosexuality, that informed every decision that he made. Everything became a major secret. You could not ask his administration, you know, you couldn't get them to confirm that the sky was blue. Everything was a major investigation. And that affected the relationship with him. And I think he did feel beat up a lot by the press. So I was surprised that he did acknowledge not just us but other members of the press corps. I think maybe looking back now, he feels that a lot of the scrutiny he looks at a little differently.
Yeah, it's, you know, if I not having had his experiences, I guess in one way we can sort of understand it. I mean, what is the biggest hazard to somebody who was living his double life and had his secret at the time? It was an investigative reporter with a pad and a pen and license to ask questions. So you can understand that. And it certainly was pleasant to get the acknowledgement in the book. And we've actually had occasion to run into him since then, and people close to him. And he's remarked about how he bears no ill will toward us and some other reporters because he felt that we were largely just doing our jobs. And in all honesty, it was a very hard job to do for the time that he was governor. So, I guess it feels good. Better than him criticizing us right now.
Well, I want to thank you both for talking with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Josh Margolin and Jeff Whalen are political reporters for the Newark Star-Ledger. They were part of the team that won a Pulitzer Prize for coverage of Governor McGreevy's resignation.